Welcome, this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have some technical difficulties. Strange as it may sound, as strange as I may sound, which I hear I'm sounding pretty good right now, I can't actually hear anything coming back to me from our control room, or even if somebody were to call in. So for tonight, at least, we will have to live with that situation. Now we have other lines, and we can talk to the control room over them, but I can't hear them in my headset. So I'm kind of flying blind, as they say. Good news is that we can go to the half-hour mark past the hour, so we're actually going to go Pacific time to 8:30. And we've ate up a little bit of that time just now with these technical difficulties, but that's okay. And I appreciate the fact that we can go a little longer. And tonight I thought we would talk about the ascendance and the life of masters. Now, the interesting thing about this is ascendance means that before a master is a master, they're really just human beings. And human beings create themselves into what we call masters. I'm going to define all that for all of you. If you haven't heard it before, when I've given shows somewhat similar, but obviously tonight will be different than any other show. So let me first start with this concept that human beings are in process. We're not perfect. We're not even close to perfect. We've got a ways to go. And part of that way is to actually become more like our Creator. That's the object. We're supposed to become somewhat godlike. Now, we're not going to become gods in the true sense of the word, but more like that in the way we think, in the way that we behave, yes. We can obviously, there's a lot of room for improvement in almost all human beings. And during this process of improvement, a human being is over a number of lifetimes. I don't want you to think this is something you're going to do on a weekend or something like that. Over a number of lifetimes, that human being takes on a completely, we'll say, different perception of reality. They overcome their illusions, meaning that their awareness of things is extremely accurate. And their awareness of things in more than one dimension has to be extremely accurate in order for this ascension part to take place. So if you're going to ascend to another level, you're going to have to change not just in the physical world, which is where we exist right now, but also in the other parts of a person's lifetime, which take place after we die from the physical body and go on to live in the astral world and then the monastic or mental worlds. And so when we do that, we're continuing our life, but in a way that does not have as many bodies and therefore not as much sense. Masters don't go through that. During the point where a person has ascended, they actually change. They don't die at any time. So death is an experience that human beings go through by giving up bodies that someone who goes beyond the human kingdom no longer actually experiences. Now, you might say, well, don't bodies wear out even for masters? Technically, yes, you can look at it that way, but not in any of the ways that human beings have in terms of their experience of death. So a master really does not experience death. And I'll get deeper into that in a little while. I don't want to get to that point. I want to get to start with human beings first and what our experiences are like. So in the human kingdom, we are attempting to co-create with God, with our Creator, in the three worlds that we do exist in, but sequentially, and to try and bring about a higher level of light or virtue in form, light in form, to make these worlds more like the thought of our own Creator and the way our Creator would like it to be if it were the doer. But we aren't. We are, and it isn't. So we're here as a kind of substitute, but a very imperfect one. And you might say, well, why doesn't God just do it? Yeah, hey, make everything perfect, and then we don't have to worry about being human and everything being hunky-dory. Yeah, well, that'd be interesting maybe to somebody who has absolutely no interest in being anything or doing anything. But for a creator who wants to become greater than it was even to begin with, the only way it can really achieve that is to create something beyond itself that has a number of autonomous abilities and a great deal of freedom in both thought and action so that it can carry out its own choices. And even if those choices are against its creator's thought, it's better than having a puppet show. And we're just going through some kind of silly predetermined actions. So what I'm saying is that life is not predetermined, quite the opposite. And it's up to us to create. Now, does that mean that there aren't laws and principles that are adopted by beings greater than us, including God itself? And don't we live within those? Yeah. But that's the part of life that has some effect on our choices, but it doesn't remove our choices. That's the difference. So obviously, you can have lots of things that affect your choices without removing them. And it doesn't make life predetermined. It makes life, actually, gives life a safety net so that things can't completely come unglued and fall apart, and life becomes extinguished in the process. As far as we ascending, this is no simple process. This is a very, very difficult one because for many, many lifetimes, we have lived in ways in which we've been self-focused, selfish, and we have used our senses in ways in which we did not very accurately understand, did not gain much understanding through our perceptions. Instead, we perceived things quite wrong and then came to even more ridiculous understandings or lack of understandings about the world around us. From that, we'll say, scenario, human beings face a rough and very, we'll say, disjointed and difficult future for who knows how long. It could be hundreds of lifetimes. And there's this glue that fits it all together called karma, because what we do at one time, the effects of it are not fully, you know, felt sometimes for lifetimes, because it slows down. The more we are selfish, the more we separate time from space. And things go very slowly, so we may not even recognize why things are not doing too well for us. And that's unfortunate, but that's the way it works. Eventually, we have to get over that. And the odd part about it is that in order to get over this problem that we have all kinds of screw-ups and we're going to have all kinds of negative karmic responses in our lifetime, and we won't understand them, so we may not be able to completely solve them. The only way to do this so it's going to work itself out is to accelerate our karma, make things go faster so we can become aware and then understand what needs to be changed in us, even though it may cause us to suffer and to have some painful experiences. Because people a lot of times ask me, well, how come I have to go through all this stuff? Why can't I just take 20 more lifetimes? I mean, who's it going to matter to? Well, the answer is that if you don't accelerate it, if you don't do something to try to make the whole thing go faster, you may never recognize, and you may never understand, therefore, because you don't recognize, you don't have the awareness of all the problems, all the things that are wrong and in your perceptions, and therefore creating illusion. And you just won't get out of it. You just keep going in circles, creating more bad karma. And so the odd part about it is that when you start choosing to make a change where you're going to end up moving towards at a fairly rapid rate by spiritual standards, the next kingdom. In other words, you're going to become one of these beings we call masters, which I'm going to explain to you about in a little bit. Once you make that decision, you've got to kind of bear the burden of things going a lot faster than you ever expected. And I mean, a lot of the bad things start happening that you really don't want to have happen. And I can attest to this. I'm part of a spiritual group. You can see it happen in spiritual groups much more readily than you can as an individual outside of that. Because the terrible things actually do happen. Because you have the collective karma of the individuals that you're working with. And it really accelerates the karma. But the good news is that that gives you the opportunity to make the changes. If you go too slow, you just never will. And then you don't get off the wheel of karma, they call it. And you never get to the point where you start to move into the next kingdom. Now you might say, okay, all right, I'll believe you. I'll believe that what you're saying is true, and maybe it's a miserable experience to go through, but maybe it's worthwhile. But then what do you have to do? What is it that you really have to do to make the changes? And this is the part that I have explained before, but I'm going to put it in somewhat different terms tonight so that it will help people who haven't understood it in the past to do a little better. You've got to make it so that you don't have equipment that is separating time from space, because that's what causes the whole problem in the first place. What we call a mistake is actually something that is literally using time up. The use of time to do things, including thought itself, is, believe it or not, part of the experience of humanity and illusion, and it's not part of what it means to be a member of the next kingdom or kingdoms beyond us, because that's what time is. It's separating from space. That we are causing the damage, you could say, to the dimensionality of the existence, of existence. And it leads to this strange, very strange type of life that we live, but we accept as being normal. So we think it's okay for people to constantly make mistakes, okay? It's okay for that. Oh, it's just only being human. How many times have you heard that? I'm just being human. I made 5 mistakes in the last hour. Well, those mistakes are the illusions coming to haunt us every 10 minutes or whatever it is and producing this delay in time and cause and effect and causing time to be wasted. So it takes more and more time to communicate intelligently with others, to create something, to even think. And we accept that as being reality. And that's the illusion. That's not true. And you say, well, you mean you could do almost anything instantly? And the answer is, yep. Yep. I know that sounds impossible. Because we're used to the experience of the illusion and not the reality. So when someone has reached a state of perfection within a dimension of time and space, within that dimension, they don't separate in time from space and things are done instantly. Literally, as they think, and they may think thousands of times faster than an average human does. It's kind of mind-boggling, isn't it? I know. And so this is I'm setting you up now for what the experience of being a non-human, a superhuman is like. But I'm trying to get you there by giving the reason why that's the case. Otherwise, once I get telling you about the life of masters, it won't make any sense because you need this foundation. And hopefully I'm going to get it done tonight. And I've tried to do this, by the way, in other shows, sometimes even on some of the other stations I've been on. And the problem has been, in the past, I've never been really successful because I don't think I built the foundation, partly because I didn't have enough time, so I'm kind of using my time tonight. And you might say, oh, but that's illusion. You should be able to do it instantly. Yes. I did it instantly right before I got on the air. The problem is that you guys are an illusion, and it's going to take me a long time to get this through to you. Oh, I know. I sound like I'm an elitist or something. I'm not. I'm not lying about that part. I really did do this whole show in what might be considered a second or two, right before I got on the air. And so it's hard to understand that. I know. You could say, well, that's not possible. You couldn't have done it. No, I really do that. I'm still a human being, but this part of being human, I've gotten to the point where I'm actually doing some things that seem superhuman. They seem that way, and then maybe they are. But in any case, it's possible to do what I'm doing because of what I'm explaining to you. And I'm not saying it to toot my own horn. I'm saying it to maybe help you to believe it's true and also at the same time understand it better. Okay, so let's move another step in this difficult direction. If a human being has to be able to not separate time from space and be able to do things virtually instantly in order to move to the next kingdom, then the senses that they use to gather information can't be separated by time or space. I mean, if you think about the logic of that, it's like, yeah, that makes sense, right? Okay, if that makes sense to you, here's our problem. For by definition, a human being is a human being because they have seven senses, major senses, in three different bodies of time and space. Each body is in a different dimension. But they're all connected together, vaguely connected together anyway. And so we have 21 major centers or chakras or senses that are separated by time and space. That's what the definition of a human being is. Uh-oh, we got a problem. Because that means a human being, by definition, is going to constantly be in illusion because their senses themselves are in the process of separating time from space whenever they're using them. Wow. You can see that this is a little bit of a quagmire. Yes, it is. And the only way around it is to unify those centers, chakras, for those of you familiar with that word, that are major chakras. What is a major chakra? It has a connection with consciousness. So it not only gives us information that is energy-based, but it tells us things that adds to and collectively affects our consciousness and interacts with the consciousness of all other things that we can be conscious of. I know that was a mouthful, right? And the center actually has two spheres to it. One of it is an energy sphere that just gets little bits and pieces of energy from other energy, because the energy in our center is slightly more advanced than the energy that it's grasping for. And you can only sense things that are equal to or less than your own sense. And that gives us basic energy. So it's sort of like, well, the energy gives us information, but it doesn't tell us how that information is connected to anything else, including any of the other centers we have. But there is a sphere of consciousness that is connected to a big part of our consciousness, which I'll call our self, and our higher self and our soul. All that is the conscious part of us. And those conscious parts can take the energy information, as long as there is a sphere of consciousness that is surrounding that and within that energy information, and literally in no time at all, this is the key, in no time at all, connect it with any other center in the same body and eventually in the other bodies as well. The key is consciousness. The more you build your consciousness, the more you can connect the centers, and the less time is separated from space, the less illusion you're in, and that's how you move on to the next kingdom, is expand your consciousness. Now, you've heard that word said before, I'm sure, but it has even greater meaning than what I've just described, because consciousness is also the part of us that gives us a representation of ourself. The self builds consciousness by giving and by focusing away from itself onto others for some betterment of the others. And it loses consciousness when it focuses in on itself, because then it is only diminishing the ability to use what we call consciousness, which is really thought applied to everything else besides ourselves. And so when it's only being used for ourselves, we lose consciousness. We lose it. So our thought is no longer being used to, in some way, help or serve or do something for anyone or something else. Rather, it's just about us. If it's all about us, our consciousness drops. Our sense of self drops, and the centers become more distant from each other, making it more difficult for us to stay out of illusion. And so we become more illusioned. Okay. Hopefully this is coming through. I know it's a lot of building here. It's a lot of blocks to put together about it. How do you get to be an ascended person? Okay, we're getting it. We're getting it. Okay, so and let me continue on. As we develop ourselves, develop better character. What is character? Character is the ability to recognize our ability in consciousness to give versus other people's ability in consciousness to give. It's the ability for us to look inside ourselves and see whether or not we're giving versus how much other people are giving. That's what character comes from. Good character comes from doing that in a wise and loving way. Bad character comes from doing it in a selfish and unloving way. You see. So as people start to develop better character, and the reason they do develop better character is because life becomes less and less meaningful. Once a person develops enough self to recognize that they don't have good character. So for most people, when they recognize they don't have good character, they start losing some of the meaning in life. Now, some people compensate for that by trying to take even more rather than give, but it doesn't work. It actually makes them less good in their feeling structure, even though they may feel better in power and control, and they may eventually reach a state of evil. It doesn't change the base bottom line. Consciousness leads to a sense of oneness with others, which leads us to the feeling of joy and eventually bliss. A lack of consciousness causes us to suffer, and a sense of loneliness and separation, isolation, and eventually meaninglessness. That's what happens. Okay, so just by the fact that over lifetimes we start developing better character, which is a good thing, by the way, we naturally start moving towards this point where by just growing our own consciousness, we recognize that our senses are not connected together. We are making a lot of mistakes. And when the mistakes that we make that hurt others are more important to us than the mistakes that hurt ourselves, we make a big step. That's a very crucial step that sometimes happens around 700 lifetimes or so. That's a lot of lifetimes. You know, it's a long time. And when that happens, there's no going back. It's kind of weird. It's like somebody turns on a switch, and you say to yourself, well, I care about other people more than I care about me. And you might say, whoa, what does that mean? What usually means that you're about to change, you're about to start the conscious steps necessary to move from the human kingdom to the kingdom of souls, sometimes referred to, or the spiritual kingdom, or the kingdom that masters exist within. And actually, there are several of those kingdoms. It isn't just one kingdom, it's actually several, but collectively we'll just call it beyond the human kingdom. And once a person goes down that road, they may have some lifetimes where they forget about it, but it never quite goes away. And unless they take the path of evil, I mean, then you really, you know, you have to kind of like slash and burn your consciousness. Once they go down that road, they're eventually going to leave the human kingdom. It might take another 70 or 80 lifetimes before that's really going to happen, because you go ahead in some lifetimes, and some lifetimes you kind of don't go ahead. And kind of, unfortunately, it's all based on choice. And so, or maybe fortunately it is, I guess fortunately, because that gives us the freedom to choose. We're not being forced to go down any path. Instead, we're making the choice. The choice is. Okay, so these are the really keys. The things I'm telling you right now are really key to getting to the point where you understand why someone is going to make the choice, even though it accelerates their karma, they're going to make their life miserable during each lifetime that they really do work on this sort of stuff. Yes, they'll be less illusioned, but they're going to be miserable some of that lifetime. And yet they're willing to do it because they want a more meaningful life, one which goes beyond just good character, but actually leads to a significant elevation in their consciousness. And eventually, although there's a gap, joy and then a state of bliss. But it does take some time to get to those places. So you may suffer through some of this in the meantime. Okay. And what is the next step? Well, the next step is something called spiritual discipline. And we're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes from now. But I want you to recognize that the difference between humans and masters is obvious from what I've already discussed. Because all of the things that I've discussed, human beings go through that masters have already completed. So everything, including the split senses and all the other stuff, that's all the human experience. It's all the illusion of being human. It is not a part of being a member of the next kingdom. So these members of the next kingdom are going to be significantly different from us. So don't be surprised when I tell you some things that are going to kind of like, oh, you're going to go, what? Yeah, they're going to be completely different from us. Okay, so we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes or so from right now. And when I come back on, I may be stumbling around because I got to kind of figure out when to come back in.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and I'm winging it tonight. I'm speaking into what is traditionally known as like a dead mic. I can hear myself, but I can't hear the control room or music or anything that's going on, and I'm about 1,000 miles away from everybody. So it's okay. I don't mind. Listen, hey, this is part of the experience of live radio, right? I've had every kind of weird thing happen, and this is one of them. And we don't know exactly what's going on with our equipment. We'll try to figure it out, of course, before next week anyway. The only thing I can say is that we won't be able to chat on any phone calls live, but the rest of you, of course, who are listening, you can keep listening, and I'm going to keep talking. And we're going to half past the hour, so we're going to go to, for those of you on Pacific time, we're going to 8:30 Pacific time, and for the rest of you, you can calculate that. If you're out of the country, you can figure it out in whatever time zone you are in. Okay, let me continue on now. Here's what we've come to. We've come to the point where we realize now that human beings are kind of all screwed up. We're all a mess because our senses are separated from each other by actually a physical distance within not only one body. And those seven senses, just quickly to get you some understanding, you have the five senses that most people are familiar with, and then the two senses are, which are called spiritual senses, which give us a sense of what God is and then how to co-create with God. Those are the two senses that are added. One of them is the lower one about understanding God. It comes from the heart chakra. And the higher one comes from the crown or head chakra. And those two senses are not conscious in most or virtually all animals. They are only conscious in human beings. So we are conscious of our own creator, which is why human beings are different from animals. I don't care if you ever have an argument with somebody about evolution. And they say, oh, we're just an extension of the monkeys, you know, and the apes, and it's nonsense. It's just complete nonsense. You can blow them away with just this one idea. There is no animal, unless you consider human beings an animal, but there's no other creature on earth that has an awareness of its own creator. And how do we know that? Well, they're not building any churches these days. The apes and the dolphins haven't started building any churches. And they don't have a concern for life in general. They have a great concern for life that is similar to themselves that they can recognize. But that's different than seeing God. They can see life, they can love life, but they can't love God. And that's what's missing from their perspective. Now, there's a few exceptions to this. Gradually, animals can gain a little tiny bit of this from being around people. That's why we call them pets. You know, they're part of the process of even becoming an ascended animal to become a human. They're in that process. Just as the people tonight I'm talking about, at least this first part, are people who are in the process of moving from being humans into becoming living souls. Living souls in the sense that they don't have to reincarnate into the body of a human being any longer. It's not necessary. They don't go through the death process that the personality goes through. And they don't suffer the fears that those who are physically alive sometimes suffer of death, which is, of course, illusion as well, because our consciousness doesn't die, just the body. And believe me, some people's bodies, they would want to keep them anyway, right? They're maybe sickly and put to the point where they're not very useful. They're more problem than they are solution, so let go of it. But the consciousness doesn't go. Consciousness actually elevates to some small degree, and for a lot of people more than that, between each living point of physical life versus astral versus mental. So when you switch your focus in your consciousness, where the focus is in your physical centers while you're physically alive, and then it moves to your astral centers, you focus on those more than any other center, that's where your consciousness then is, and you actually can see and understand and live within the astral dimension. The astral dimension is all around us. The problem is that we can't perceive it completely because we're too much in illusion. The separation of our bodies from each other, as well as the senses in the bodies, limits us to only being able to focus in consciousness on one body at a time. And for those of you who are listening to my voice, most of you are physically alive, and therefore you're focused in on your etheric physical body. That's just one body. It's an electrical part of the physical part. The etheric is the electrical or electromagnetic. And so when we die from the physical body, we actually are forced, because we don't have a physical body to sense from anymore, to shift our consciousness to our astral body within a relatively short time. There's a little buffer time for some people. A lot of people, they just separate their sense to their etheric body, and then their physical body could be kind of dead and falling apart, but their etheric body is still integrated for a relatively short time, sometimes a few weeks, a couple months, but in some people it's just 5 minutes. And then they shift to the astral world, and boom, they end up there in a minute, and that's where they're going to live a lot longer time than they live usually while they were physically alive. Okay, so the separation of the senses and the separation of the bodies creates huge amounts of illusion. And it's only through creating virtue, light and form, and raising our consciousness, which means we're co-creating with our Creator on a conscious level, that we can remedy this problem. It takes a number of lifetimes, as I said, maybe 70 to 80, maybe more for some people, maybe less for others, to go through the process of moving from the human kingdom to the kingdom of souls, or to the kingdom where we talk about masters. And you have to create yourself in the process for the most part. On Earth, because it's such a difficult planet because of all kinds of problems, people are in such bad illusion here. There's so many negative, hostile problems that Earth has created for itself, the people on Earth have, that we actually get a little bit of help in the process of moving gradually, let's call it, from the human kingdom to the next. The next kingdom actually helps us out. How do they do that? Well, there's a process called initiation, which is not unique to Earth, but it's pretty uncommon. And only a few planets use it because it requires jumps in consciousness. It's not smooth sailing. Kind of, you move and then you fail and you move and you fail, and it doesn't guarantee that the whole planet will survive. It accelerates the rate of movement from the human kingdom to the next, because the next kingdom is helping us. But it also endangers the process because it's so much faster. And remember, faster means more suffering. It means more karma coming on you more quickly. You may be overwhelmed by it. The results can go negative, and you could end up with a crash and burn situation where the whole planet kind of fails because humans fail. We are the determining factor of success or failure of a planet, we being human beings. And so much is dependent upon us. You would ask yourself, why take the risk of using this really kind of dangerous process? And the answer is speed. The beings that are way up there in consciousness, they have a lot to do with the creation of the planet itself, have decided. And you can, if you want to say God, you can use that word too, although God is a little more abstract and stronger in the more distant cosmological sense than the being that just is involved with creating a planet. But still, to us, that may seem like a God. And these beings are concerned about us overcoming certain kinds of evil, especially on Earth, and performing, we'll call it, certain services to many other worlds who may be waiting for answers to very difficult problems in dealing with some of the more nasty parts of evil. And Earth is involved in this. Most planets aren't, but we are. And we are here, all of us, because we think we can make a difference, or we wouldn't be here. And so, and we could choose not to be here as our soul, not as a human being, but as our soul we could. When we go back through this long process I told you about, you eventually give up all the human bodies, and you're not back to your soul. And it's like awakening. Oh, I've been my soul all along. I just took this journey where I lost most of my consciousness. And so you, with the consciousness of the soul restored to and added to the self-structure of the last human being's life, that human being actually awakens to being their soul. But at that point, they say, hey, guess what? Crazy as it may seem, I'm ready to go back. Yeah. And the soul has already been figuring out the best ways to do that with many other souls for another step in reincarnation. But still, there's this tremendous effort that has to be done that requires the help of the next kingdom or two to literally make the senses become more joined suddenly. I'm talking like in an instant. It takes a few seconds. Instead of lifetimes. And they do it through a process called initiation. I'm not going to go through the entirety of that process today, because if I did, we wouldn't have time to talk about what a lot of people are interested in, which is the life of masters. But still, I want you to realize that without the help of the next kingdom, we'd never get it done. It would take, instead of 700 lifetimes, it would be 7,000 lifetimes. That's how much longer it would take. Now, it is true, but we get what they do to you, some people call it the zap. Unfortunately, it also it has a lot of negative factors to it. People aren't quite right when the next kingdom intervenes and causes the sun joining together of our senses and the joining together of bodies too at the same time. It makes us not feel right. It makes us in some cases not function very well. So it isn't an easy process by any stretch, but it's necessary. Necessary if you're going to do this sort of thing on Earth. Earth is just a really tough place to be. If there's any place someone's going to be illusioned while they're physically alive, especially, it's going to be on Earth. Very few planets are as screwed up as we are right now. And you might say, well, okay, but I guess you're saying I chose to be here, so what do I do? Okay, eventually we get it right. Eventually, we go through these unifications of the senses and the bodies, and we get all of the senses in one body and eventually all of the senses in all the bodies to become unified. It works in the reverse order of what you might think. This is the way it works. Okay, you ready? For the first part of the initiation process, you're only doing like 10% or something. It's very small and mostly affecting, oddly, the physical senses. I say oddly because you're going to see this whole thing reverse in a minute. And so you start off with the thing that you're most familiar with, physical senses. You try to make those work better, and you try to use those senses to serve others in ways that are intelligent and helpful and truthful and wise. You do that. It's a good thing. And usually do it with a group of others because it's much easier to do it that way. Okay. Then you go through and you get zapped. At the end of this process, and I'm not going to go through the whole steps and everything, you get zapped, and then you move on. And then the next thing is, bingo, you're working now more on adding the astral body into the process a lot more. That's called the second initiation. The astral body now becomes preeminent, but you have to raise the physical body to a new level, like about 25% of unification of the senses, but not just in the physical body, but in the astral as well. And you might say, well, that sounds a lot more difficult because aren't you adding, and then you're also, yeah, you're adding the bodies, and the bodies are getting closer together while you're at the same time. And the bodies don't work very well together until they're within a percentage, a small percentage, a couple percent, of being the same amount of unification in each of the bodies. Otherwise, they don't work together, which is very important. And so this is a difficult balancing act, a very, very difficult process. And you get zapped again, and you become a leader, you become everything else, and then you move on to the next initiation. The zapping, remember, causes this process to fill in a lot faster towards the end of that initiation. And then during the third part of the initiation process, you got to bring up your mental abilities to over 50% of unification of the senses. And you got to bring up the other bodies to the same level by the end of the initiation. And whatever you don't do is done during the zap. You get kind of a bzzz, and it gets them all aligned. Your bodies get all aligned together, and they all get within a couple percent of each other. And wow, now you're halfway there or more. Probably by the end of the third initiation, you could be 50 to 60% there. That means you're more a member of the next kingdom as you begin the fourth initiation than you are of the human kingdom. Wow, that's pretty cool, you know. And, okay, so then what? Well, this is the kind of weird part about this. Like I said, it gets kind of confusing. Because now you're going to unify mostly the mental body, and the other two bodies are going to suffer. And it's a great sacrifice. You have to renounce a lot of things about self-interest and being a human being. You have to really renounce being human. You have to say, I no longer want to be human. You have to prove it in a number of different ways. And it's not easy. The proof comes only to yourself, really. But if you can't prove to yourself that you no longer want to be human, you will never stop being human. It's no easy task. And interestingly, there is sort of a zap, but it isn't the same. Because you actually have to let go. You kind of zap yourself by letting go of the parts of you that are human. Then there is kind of like an extra zap that helps you to ascend your soul now. The whole, not the human part. The soul actually ascends to the next plane of existence called the Buddhic or intuitional plane. But as far as unifying the lower bodies, that has to be done by the human. The human himself or herself has to do it, and no zap can do it for them during this fourth initiation. It has to be done by them. And they do it by giving up. They give up all the elements of what it means to be human. Part of those elements includes a thing called the causal body. The causal body is like a big crutch. Since there's a time-space distortion problem for the thoughts of the human being, since their mental senses are separated, and also the mental body itself is separated in two places, it is very difficult for a human being to think very originally. So humans, believe it or not, are not very original thinkers. They are much more original than animals, by far. But they're not even close to being as original as, say, a third or fourth level initiate, and not even a fraction as close as someone even beyond that. So a master is a super, super original thinker because they don't have a thing that's a crutch called a causal body that thinks most of the time, helps them to think around all the illusion they have. It's a bunch of devonic energies that think and hold thought together for us, long enough so we can conceive of concepts. Well, you have to let go of that so that you have to make the concepts hold together yourself. Tremendous more thought has to be able to be used, and it makes you a super creative being because everything you look at, you can create something new about because you're not belabored by only having to use energies that are shared among all other human beings, in a sense, and that make you kind of common to the fold. And by giving this up, you lose that commonality, and you become truly more godlike. Godlike means more creative, more individual, even though you're becoming more group conscious at the same time. Group consciousness just means that you're concerned about all others, but at the same time, you're actually building uniqueness. And this is the part that confuses people. People think, oh, well, don't you lose your individuality? No! Masters are so much more individual than human beings, it's not even a close call. Wait, we're going to get to it in a couple minutes, but they are amazing beings. They're the kind of beings that every human being really wants to be, but they don't even know that they could be that way. Okay. So, but that's the reason why. You got that we humans can have a causal body. We've got an inner and outer causal body. It's more complicated than I explained it. And you have to sacrifice it. You have to literally give it away. And when you give it away, if the people you give it to abuse it, then it hurts you. They don't pay for it. You do. So there's a cost to giving it. Sound pretty nasty? Well, it can be. That's why they call it renouncing being human. Because you got to give up everything that you think is important to a human being in order to leave being human. Okay. Now, again, I'm skipping over a lot of this stuff because this is very complicated, and technically I could speak for hours trying to explain how this whole thing works. But that's not the point of what tonight is about. I'm just trying to get you to the place where you're starting to distinguish between what a human being is and what we're moving into, which is a superhuman. Now, I'm going to take a little bit of a rest here for a second by just telling you about an experience I had today. It's just, you could call this sort of a commercial. It's maybe a commercial. I don't know. It's whatever you want to call it. Just to give you guys a break, because since we're going a little longer, even though we missed a little bit of the show in the beginning. I'll let your brains cool off because now we're going into the Never Never Land. I guarantee that when we continue on, I'm going to start telling you things that you're going to go, oh, what? Okay. But I want to tell you about, I met the group I'm a member of, the spiritual group I'm a member of, met a woman, her name is Kavita. She's from India, and she works for Nova Home Loans. And what does she do? Well, she helps people refinance their houses who are in trouble. And in this stage, it's about half of us, right, who are listening. And she wants you to know that she can help you. That's what she's there for. She can actually help you. She has green loans for energy efficiency, if you're interested in that. And for people who live in Arizona, this is a big deal. Because one of the areas that the people that I'm involved with work in is called alternative energy approaches. And they help people to really gain tremendous energy efficiency in their homes, even in their automobiles, and other things. I've talked about this in prior shows. You can go back and listen to those shows if you haven't heard them. And so Kavita is involved in doing this. Now, if you're out of the state, I was thinking about this, and I know a lot of people listening to the show, they're not in Arizona. Some of you aren't in the United States. I know that. So here's the thing. You can call her. and she'll still refer you to someone in your area. Now, if you're really far out of the United States, I don't know if she can help you because they may not have anything like what she's got, you know, because these are a lot of the stuff is federal loans, et cetera. But there might be something in another country that might be a correspondence. A lot of people have problems right now keeping their houses. You can reach her. I want you to write down this number. It's 480-430-6911. Now, that's if you're in the States. If you're out of the States, you know you have to dial a couple more numbers to get to the U.S. You'll figure that out on your own. And give her a call, even if you're in another state. I'm sure she can direct you to the appropriate loan source, and she can tell you what's available, because it's available throughout the United States. These are federal things. And they are new kinds of ways to get yourself out of being underwater. If you know what I'm talking about, then you're probably in trouble. But if you're underwater in your house, give her a call, because she can probably help you. And if you're trying to do energy efficiency loans, these are kind of virtually new, almost brand new. She can help you with those too, and she has a whole team of people. And no, you don't have to put up any money. You don't have to pay her. You know, I mean, she gets paid through another way, through a bank and stuff. So don't worry about that. She's not doing this, to get you to support her or something. This is what she's doing to be of help. So give Kavita a call. Okay, so let me go on now and tell you about what it's like once you get through all the zaps and all this other stuff, and you finish. The last life of a human is as a world leader, usually, someone who is so amazingly creative, they come up with solutions for world problems, literally. And the group that they're functioning in literally is solving world problems on a literally daily basis. So it's an important element to understand that that's what leads you into the next kingdom. And at the end of that life, that's called an adept. That's a person who is adept at what they do. They have at minimum one of their bodies is the senses are joined. It's usually the mental body. It's fully joined in the senses. The two lower bodies during that last lifetime have to be put right with the mental body, and then so they're all together as one sense now. There's only one sense, because there's no separation of time and space. That sense is being God in the three lower worlds, the three lowest worlds of our universe. Those are the mental, astral, or some people say emotional, and etheric physical. Those three worlds, the person, the being, becomes, has the sense of, and becomes a part of God. And they do so by their own creations only. Now, they do it cooperatively with many others. And that's the part that's a little strange for human beings, anyway. With all this great success, they will not complete the process and move into the next kingdom until they do it perfectly with other human beings in a spiritual setting. We'll call it a spiritual group. Some of those human beings they may have saved in a prior lifetime, usually the lifetime right before that one. In other cases, they may be new human beings who have done exemplary things themselves. But this is a very advanced group of people. And once that group of people does these amazing things, the great teacher that this being has become moves on to the next kingdom. And what does that mean? It means their soul moves. The soul is no longer found in the mental world. The three lower bodies just become a place of creation. And the soul resides in the Buddhic or intuitional world. This is where the next kingdom actually plays a role in helping that soul to move up there. But that's not important for us to know right now. What is life like, then? What is life like for a being who has made this gigantic move from being human? Well, the first thing is they don't make any mistakes in the three lower worlds. It's hard to understand what that means. No mistakes. The reason they don't make any mistakes is because they never separate time from space. they live a perfect existence in the three lower worlds. They are not perfect above the monastic or mental world. There they still have imperfection and have a great deal of growth to be done. But in the three lower worlds, they can function in a godlike fashion. What can they do? They can instantly change any form, any type of matter into something else. They have the ability to change matter into other things. You can say, well, is that like alchemy or something? No, it's not like alchemy, because they do it by thought. They create the perfect image of thought, and they can do something called white magic. And what it is, it's the ability to convert their thought into the energy of the three worlds, to align the thought in those three worlds to a perfect state, and to produce whatever effect they seek. Because the causes and the effects that they produce are done together at the same time. There is no time. It doesn't take them any time to do anything if they seek to do so. Now, this is going to sound strange, but they usually don't do this for humans. As a matter of fact, they pretty much stay out of the human realm completely. And on planets like Earth, where humans are so responsible for the planet's development, these beings tend to stay away from all the elements that humans are supposedly going to be responsible for. And they let humans make all the mistakes that they might make. Under rare circumstances, they might come in and change something a human has done. But in most circumstances, they allow the humans to be creative. So they give up, they sacrifice this great ability of omnipotence in the three lower worlds, because although they have it, they don't use it very often. And the reason for that is that it would interfere with the lower kingdom below them, human kingdom, from developing. And they don't want to disturb that development, so they don't do this thing they are capable of doing. And you could say, but I thought that they eventually become omnipotent beings, and wouldn't that give them the right? Well, it gives them the right, but the right doesn't mean they do it. And initially, they gain this ability by becoming not omnipotent in any place, but by becoming omniscient. Omniscience is below omnipotence. The best way to understand it is that they are all-knowing. They have enough consciousness so they can apply any fraction of knowledge to every other fraction of knowledge that is in existence. And from that, they can create something brand new if they choose to. Or they can choose to not create if it's going to interfere with humans or some other part of life. Masters spend their time literally planning and thinking about the alternatives without taking action in the three lower worlds. They spend most of their time not taking action, especially anything that involves humans. They tend to be mostly involved with and care about the lower kingdoms when humans are present, because humans are so damaging to the lower kingdoms until they really advance themselves quite far. So they spend a great deal of time doing remedial repair in the lower kingdoms. The lower kingdoms include animals, plants, and minerals. And how do they repair these kingdoms? They work with what are called group souls, with oversouls, because they and the oversouls are pretty close to the similar level of consciousness now. And they work together to attempt to get the group souls and the self structure, the conscious part of the group souls, to be able to adjust more rapidly to a treacherous and dangerous and destructive environment, from oil slicks to you name it, that humans are going to be producing right along. But they will not directly involve themselves in preventing humans from making the mistakes, only in trying to remediate the mistakes that the humans are making. So they're kind of like big, giant babysitters in a sense. They are trying to help all of these lower kingdoms to survive the intrusion of humanity. And they don't come to a planet, and they don't usually exist much on a planet until humans are present, because they're not needed. They are not needed until humans are there, because before humans are there, the kingdoms can pretty much take care of them. The lower kingdoms can take care of themselves with the group souls doing their job, etc. Once the humans are there, if it wasn't for the masters, the planet would come unglued in short order. Now, we don't know this is going on. We don't understand this is going on, because they do it in a very, very careful way. So we can't see them. We don't understand them. And we don't have enough awareness to perceive them. They could be standing right next to you, and you wouldn't know it. If they choose to, at least. Now, they can intervene in that. They can make themselves be present, and you can see them or whatever. But strangely, they don't do that very often either. As a matter of fact, less and less often than ever before, because the more humans are aware of them, the more they become glamored, which means, like, it's really because it's important. The master likes me, or the master is this way towards me, or maybe will give me something, or maybe will fix something for me, or whatever. You know, they don't want that. They don't want that kind of relationship with human beings. Okay. What is more, in a more intimate level, what is life like as one of these beings? They work together. And they work together in amazingly co-creative, but individually creative ways. They are figuring out continuously not only the problems that exist today, but the problems that will exist in 10 years, 20 years, 100 years, 1,000 years from now. That's how far ahead they think. And they're coming up with potential solutions, first individually, and then contributing these solutions together, because they think together. That what one comes up with as a solution is shared in the intuitional or Buddhic realm with all others, because they're omniscient. They literally share the knowledge. And so their life is continually thrilling, because not only are they great individual creators, but they share in the creation of all the other beings like themselves and above. Their experience of being God at this level is a certain level of omniscience with certain capabilities of omnipotence, which they almost never use, and then the amazing co-creation that all other members of their kingdom are experiencing simultaneously with God. They literally are becoming God, because that's what God's experience is. But God's experience is more widespread. I can't go to the full God experience tonight. There's not enough time. But God's experience goes to more dimensions and to more beings than just the next kingdom or two above human. But nonetheless, I'm hoping you're getting a feeling for this thing. It's just like you're getting a slice of God. That's what their experience of life is like. Unlike humans, which suffer immensely from great fears and loneliness and meaninglessness, their life is continuously filled with a countless variety of meaningful new experiences and ideas and thoughts. They are living souls. Our own souls, which are not freed, that aren't like these advanced masters, our own souls that are trapped in a very small part of the mental, higher mental world, have a little bit of this type of reality among themselves. But because they haven't become fully omniscient, they have to share it out over a certain type of, we'll call it almost like fantasies of theoretical lifetimes, where they're figuring out how best to live. That doesn't happen with these masters. These masters, when they are thinking, they're coming up with completed solutions individually that they are completely embodied and sharing with all the other masters at the same time. So there is no separation of time and space in the Buddhic realm. They immediately experience all of the grand invention, we'll call it, that each one of them is creating. Just an amazing, amazing kind of life. And that's just the very tip of the iceberg. What is their interpersonal, although that doesn't make much sense because they don't have a personality, but their personality becomes joined with their soul and it's just one being. But we'll call it interpersonal for our sake of discussion. What is their interpersonal relationship like then? Well, among each of them, they find each other as an extension of God, so they love each other enormously. There is no sense of separation other than the uniqueness of creation itself, which in itself is the greatest sense of separation, but it isn't separation like separation of loneliness. It's separation of uniqueness of individuality combined with, at the same moment, being one with all. I hope you may understood what I last said. It's a hard concept to understand, isn't it? They're incredibly unique. They're becoming even more unique every second that they create something new. And they're sharing in all the creations of all the other beings. Yet those creations make them one with all those other beings at the same time. So the sense of oneness grows while the sense of individuality grows. And they are not paradoxical or in conflict with each other, as many people think of it. Just the opposite. It's the illusion of humans that these two are incompatible. It's just the illusion. It's not the truth. Okay. What else do they experience? Do they have sex? Do they have a male, female? Yes. But they have decided what their sex is. Unlike human beings, that, of course, we at least not in any truly creative way do we decide. You could say, yeah, well, you can go in for surgery and this and change and take the hormones and, yeah. But that isn't truly deciding your sex. That's maybe fighting with the sex that you are. No, they actually can decide their sex, and they do that, and they stay at that sex. They may make one change before they move out of our universe if they so want to. So they could go the opposite way if they wanted to. But in most cases, they choose the sex actually even before they get into their own kingdom. And they stay at that sex. Do they marry? Do they have the kind of relationship that humans would call romantic love? Yep, they do. Most of the time, they marry a student who may be on the way towards becoming a member of their kingdom. Now, you might say, why did they do that? Why don't they just marry each other? Well, because it is more interesting for both parties, if that's the relationship they have, than if they are completely on the same plane. Because part of the romantic sexual experience, now this doesn't mean that one has to be a male, one has to be a female all the time in one direction, like all masters are males and all students are females. No, it's just the opposite, actually. There is no way it has to be. In the last 5,000 years, there have been more males, a lot more males. But that has to do with the nature of our planet. It isn't about masters and their students. But they do take on usually someone who is close behind them, not too far behind, but who they can give to and help build while the two of them become connected together and their oversouls also become connected together for literally what we would consider to be near forever, if not forever. For the life of our universe. For the life of our universe. So instead of till death do ye part, I guess till the universe ends for them. You know, if that isn't long enough. That's like billions and billions of years. You might say, well, how could they stay together for billions and millions of years? I mean, we have trouble staying together for a few decades without people wanting divorces and doing other things and whatever. The difference is that the energy that connects the bonds them together is not the human emotion of love, but the love of the beingness of being a part of God. They are jointly becoming individual besides sharing this with all others. So it's another step in the process. And most masters choose that step. So I guess I'm telling you most masters, by our definition or understanding, although it's not the true word that would make that sense to them, are married. Okay? Now, do they have children? No, because they don't go through reincarnation, and children is part of the reincarnation process. So they don't have a birthing issue going on, because they're birthing to everybody and everything. You might say they're birthing to whole kingdoms. It might be the best way to understand that. And what else can I tell you about their life? A lot more, but I'm running out of time. They work together along one or more of the seven types of energies that are focused or in or out of focus on a planet at a time. They work in, some people call them ashrams. I don't know if that word would really apply to their understanding of it, but that's the human understanding of it. Yes, they work together more with those who have an affinity for the type of energies that they prefer to use and the path that they're using it on. There are a number of paths. There are seven paths they can take, nine if they're on a sacred planet, which are not if they're connected with Earth. And these paths are ways that they eventually will leave this universe by completing the experience of having been God, past, present, and future. The future is extrapolated, but it's still a real future in this universe. So they have to leave this universe. They have to become God in every dimension of where God exists in all parts of time, past, present, and future. That's a pretty long journey. It's actually a longer journey than the journey to become human and move from human to their kingdom in the first place. So it's longer than that. And I am running out of time. I'm going to take a couple more minutes. I don't think the radio station will cut me off here because we got a late start. And whatever. They're probably listening to this and saying, yeah, go a little further. I'll go a little bit further. So what's the rest of their experience life? What is the real meaning to their life? The meaning to their life is to know that all life is truly God's growth, and to experience as much of all life, not just on this individual planet. Eventually, all the paths lead to extraplanetary, cosmological, great van, you know, to eventually experience millions of different worlds, millions of different stars and galaxies. This is what they're headed for. And they stay here, close to this planet, for a relatively short time, but by our standards it may seem like a lot of time, you know, thousands of years by our time. But really it's a very short time. And they eventually get to meet beings from all over the universe, and to share the omniscience and the omnipotence that they gain with all beings throughout the entire universe. So it's so large. Their life experience is so great that to even touch upon it in any kind of show like this would be impossible. But I want you to realize that the meaning to them is for life to grow more abundantly and to become closer and more knit, more co-creative with its own creator. That's what they understand existence to be. And they directly experience this in so many amazing ways. Once they free themselves from an unsacred or non-sacred planet like Earth, they can move to all kinds of sacred planets and experience simultaneously dozens, even hundreds of planets at the same time, just like they can presently experience the three lower worlds at the same time, be aware of what's going on in the mental, astral, and physical all at the same time. They can actually do that on multiple planets eventually as they move down these other paths. It's so amazing. It's so remarkable. I don't know the we could ever really fully appreciate what it means to be these great beings. Now, do they have an affinity for or compassion for humanity? Yes, because they all, the masters at least, used to be human. The oversouls, which are connected to the masters, and it's kind of like a cosmic marriage with them too, those great beings have never become human. They go through a different kind of life cycle, and they bypass. They're never a part of the human kingdom. But they gain all the experience of what it means to be human from their human counterpart. And both are considered to be masters. They come from different sources, though, and they have eventually similar experiences, but they share between them. And without the oversouls, like on Earth, we would be really finished because we wouldn't even have a conscience. Human beings get their conscience in part from their oversoul. So very important issue. Masters become part of what is called the spiritual triad of the oversoul, which means that they actually join with these higher dimensions. The oversoul has already existed in. The master has to learn how to live in those dimensions as well. Well, we are running out of time, and I don't want to take up too much more of what this show is about. But I do want you to realize that we have a great future to look forward to. And although getting there is the hardest thing that any human being can ever do, there's no harder thing, nothing harder than moving from the human kingdom to the kingdom of souls, to the masters, to being one yourself. It's the most rewarding thing that you ever will do, up to that point at least. If you haven't heard about it, by the way, you should get yourself some soul balance. We've been talking about souls. Soul balance helps to unify the centers. And if you want more information about that, call 602-472-5127 and get the information about it. That stuff's pretty amazing. It can save your life if you have certain kinds of problems, illnesses and things. And also, I'm still using the product Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol. If you haven't tried that, you got to try it. It really works. It helps you to stay younger, and your life will be longer and healthier. Use it for your pets, too. It's available for animals, Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol BF formula. Forever Young Products. Give them a call, foreveryoungproducts.com, if you want to look them up. 800-777-7850. We're out of time for right now. I appreciate you listening in. I hope this has made some difference for all of you. And again, thanks to the radio station for letting me go longer. Even I grabbed a few more minutes here at the very end. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.